What a time, what a warm and wondrous time. So sweet a shining moment in the sun. Oh, what a time, was there ever such a time? Then suddenly it's done, the moment passes. Where does the time go? Must we let it end? Where does the time go?
Time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. And welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding areas. My name is Jay Koronek. Happy to be with you today, and I'm joined in the studio as usual by Dennis Reimars, our WHFR news director. And Dennis, this is mic check time.
Mic check.
Okay.
Dennis check, mic check.
Dennis check. Okay. The mic's not here, but
Mike is no longer with us.
Okay. And we want to start with looking, by the way, this is WHFR.fm, and you know, there is our website. So tell your friends, and remember yourself, if you just can't listen some Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock, you can go to the website anytime after 2 p.m. on that week, and the show will be archived there under talk shows. So WHFR.fm, click on talk shows, click on journal, and pick the appropriate date. It's an MP3, so you could download it and listen later, or just listen live directly from the site. Okay, looking at the Dearborn Press and Guide from Sunday, this last Sunday, the 12th, because today is February 17th, my attention was drawn to the editorials, always a pretty good, generally partisan, accurate editorials by Morris Goodman and Albert Foster in the Sunday Press and Guide. Sort of a he said, she said sort of thing, although not directly criticizing each other. Albert Foster speaking for the Republican Party positions, that is usually the majority Republican Party positions, and he does that well, but without, you know, it's kind of you know, by rote, which you might say. It's following the playbook. And that's good if you don't know what the playbook is for the Republican Party.
You're saying it's predictable?
Very, very predictable.
Right.
Yeah. But again, he does a good job, but it doesn't seem like he's adding any of his own thoughts or disagreements. Nonetheless, maybe he doesn't have any, and that's okay. His topic was censorship versus free speech, and he's in favor, or he's against politically correctness, that is, stopping people from saying what they want to say. Freedom of speech in America means that it's also we're also free to say things that other people may not like a lot or like to hear. Now, on broadcast radio and broadcast TV, the Federal Communications Commission will not allow us to use obscenity, indecency, or profanity. Now, some stations do. My students are always telling me, oh, I hear it every morning from 89X. And I had to point out that's a Canadian-based station. They're under the country of Canada's broadcast rules, which are not the same as ours. So just because you hear it somewhere, try to think of the source. Or say, oh, last night on TV, I heard all kinds of things. Well, what were you watching? Oh, I was watching this cable channel or this HBO movie. Okay, there's no censorship for anything other than obscenity, indecency, and profanity on broadcast radio and TV in America. Now, what about this political correctness? He was saying, oh, Democrats and others shouldn't have criticized the Super Bowl commercial taken out by Pete Hoekstra, who's running for the Republican nomination for Senate. First of all, he's in the primary, and you have to vote for him over other Republican candidates. And we're going to talk about this primary later. But my point is, excuse me, Al, apparently, and I'm sorry to say that the last third or so of your editorial was put in the second section of Section A. In other words, they're actually publishing extra pages of Section A.
Okay.
And the follow-up story, or the rest of the rest of your comment was in the last. So I don't know what you said in the last part of your statement, but just drawing all of our attentions for those other people that also lost the second section of the pressing guide from last Sunday, you know that hey, Republicans were extremely critical. Talk about the liberals or you know being upset with Pete Hoekstra, a Republican. So many Republicans across the country were upset over an advertisement. It wasn't even a political commercial. It was from a business company, Chrysler, that had Clint Eastwood in there. Oh, Clint was and Chrysler were supporting Obama and blah, blah, blah. No, he wasn't. And whether or not he has, Chrysler has the right to do that is another issue. It's not obscene, indecent, or profane, so they had the right to do it. But I actually listened to it after the fact. I don't watch the Super Bowl. I thought, oh, well, they must have said something. Okay, here it is. I've got youtube.com/Chrysler queued up. And obviously you can't see the pictures, but it's Clint Eastwood walking down a dark alley in silhouette, sort of. And I think there is a flash of a Chrysler. But listen right now closely, turn up your radios, folks, to the words of It's Halftime in America from the Chrysler Corporation. See what you think. We'll talk about it afterwards.
It's halftime. Both teams are in their locker room discussing what they can do to win this game in the second half. It's halftime in America, too. People are out of work and they're hurting. And they're all wondering what they're going to do to make a comeback. And we're all scared because this isn't a game. The people of Detroit know a little something about this. They almost lost everything. But we all pull together. Now Motor City is fighting again. I've seen a lot of tough eras, a lot of downturns in my life, and times when we didn't understand each other. It seems that we've lost our heart at times. The fog of division, discord, and blame made it hard to see what lies ahead. But after those trials, we all rallied around what was right and acted as one. Because that's what we do. We find a way through tough times, and if we can't find a way, then we'll make one. All that matters now is what's ahead. How do we come from behind? How do we come together? And how do we win? Detroit's showing us it can be done. And what's true about them is true about all of us. This country can't be knocked out with one punch. We get right back up again, and when we do, the world's gonna hear the roar of our engines. Yeah, it's halftime, America. And our second half's about to begin.
So, Dennis, you hadn't heard that before, I understand. What did you think of the words? Were they pro-Obama?
No, there was, I hate to use the word generic, but they could have applied to just a number of situations.
I think I have to say they're overly optimistic about the future of America and even for Detroit to pull itself together. But isn't that the right spirit?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, you have to be
How
hopeful.
Could
sure.
any Republican or Democrat criticize those words? Now, in the background, if you saw the video, you see a few Chrysler Corporation vehicles carrying people around, and at the end it says Chrysler imported from Detroit and
sure.
so on. But there's nothing in those words by Clint Eastwood that could be construed as liberal or conservative. He said, in Detroit, yeah, it came together. Okay, yes, and we know that there was a much disputed and very small amount of bailout money that came from the federal government. I mean, by comparison with the other $800 billion that bailed out Wall Street, the amount that bailed out the big banks was huge compared to what came to General Motors and Chrysler. And, you know, and those are working out just fine. GM even paid back all of its loans.
GM had their biggest profit ever.
Yeah.
This past quarter.
Of course, Chrysler became under Italian ownership, but still, the important thing was the jobs and the economic upset. You've got to do something. Any good government would try to do something to balance that out, to take away some, if not all, of the pain from that upheaval. And I think it's just a wonderfully patriotic, almost spiritual, probably overly optimistic view of what
hopeful.
We still might be able to do by working together. He specifically talked about the division and what happens after it shows that same criticism, that same divisive criticism came from the Republicans, of course. Oh, he's supporting Obama. And, of course, Fox News, and they never think through anything that they say. I'm sorry, it's my opinion. Remember, the show is full of opinions, and none of them are necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. But, you know, just listen to the ad, make your own decision. And Clint Eastwood had to come out, too, in the press. And I'm not sure this was fully indicated. Cause, whoa, Clint, you're a Republican. And other people know that he's actually a libertarian type of Republican. How dare you say those things to support the Democrats? And he said, I'm not supporting the Democrats. Look at what I said. You know, and Clint, it turns out, he said, I wouldn't even favor the bailout. But we had to do something, didn't we? You know, and let's move ahead. And it turns out the bailout of GM has helped put them back on track. And Chrysler had to change owners. But at least the jobs and the people of Detroit were not hurt anymore. We were hurt so much over the last couple of years. Yes, I agree with Clint. I agree with, in a way, Mitt Romney. I'm sorry. But, you know, GM deserved to die. Why? It wasn't the unions. Thank you, Mitt, for bringing that up in your latest TV spot. It was the corporate management. They're the ones in control. Unions, okay, they want their little share. But who chose to kill the electric car back in the 1990s that GM had? GM did. Okay. All kinds of bad decisions, not keeping up with the Japanese competition because they decided to run GM that way. The corporation deserved to be hurt badly. I think what Romney will probably say, and he hasn't, I'm surprised, is that if you go bankrupt, doesn't mean you're out of business. It means you can just write off all those creditors. You can get out scot-free. You get a pass. Doesn't mean when you go into bankruptcy that it's going to be the end of everything for you. But it would have put a lot of people out of work, you know, in Detroit. And that's what we're concerned about. And Clint's comment, I don't know if he wrote it or Chrysler wrote it, for him, but he had to agree to it, even as a libertarian Republican who was against the bailout, is that you had to do something to help Detroit. You had to have some compassion here. I always laugh that George W. Bush always referred to himself as a compassionate conservative, as if most conservatives are not, which is quite telling. And then he didn't really do anything that I thought was very compassionate. But nonetheless, that's my opinion. I'm sticking to it. But I think Clint Eastwood is saying you've got to be compassionate or liberal or whatever, and you've got to move forward. You've got to be optimistic. You've got to work on the problems and get some answers, not just carpet each other over political agendas that have not, you know, it's just a political status game, especially heading to an election in November. You know, we got to score points for our side, to use the football analogy, which is totally wrong. Government is there to help the people, I thought, you know, as representatives of the people, not just some of the people, but all of the people. And some people may disagree with about that. But nonetheless, I think that was the whole concept. And I think it's a great ad. Again, if you want to watch it again or show it to your friends or share it, youtube.com/Chrysler.
I don't get it. I did not know. You're right. I wasn't aware of it. And I do watch the game. I got up at halftime, apparently. Anyway, had you not told me, it would have been difficult to guess that it was even a commercial, because it was so hopeful. They, you know, the successful commercials now kind of divorce themselves a little bit from the product, and mm-hmm. they make the, and as you know, and I know you don't watch the game, but you hear about the commercials during the game. They're very entertaining.
If you can associate your product with a positive spirit, that's an emotion.
That's
emotions
huge.
Are more powerful than actual facts about the price of the car, the gas mileage. So just like the most successful car ad everybody knows was last year's M&M music behind a Chrysler spot. The first imported from Detroit spot. And sure, it showed Chrysler 300s driving through Detroit, and showed some Detroiters.
I think Ndamukong Suh was in that, too. He's the football player from the Lions.
But it was so powerful. It had that. I keep thinking that the announcer's voice is that guy from Criminal Minds, but Joe Mantegna. But it sounds like him anyway.
It does.
But a very, very good announcer. And then the strong driving rhythms of a definitely still a Detroit-based popular music artist, Eminem.
Sure.
That sold tons of Chryslers and brought people back to the Chrysler product. Because of the emotional factor. People said, yeah, that's the spirit, that's the emotion. So all advertisers know that if they can get their product tied in with the right emotion that fits deeper and stays longer than any sort of objective fact about their product, then they've done it. Now, I have to say for Chrysler, though, to their credit, my dad worked for Chrysler for like 45 years, and they weren't very nice to him, but he, you know, finally did retire, but he worked a hard online assembly line job all his life, and he had all kinds of physical problems after that. But Chrysler, under Fiat, has improved their product greatly. Every year they make steps to improve the quality, and they had some real problems a couple of years ago. That other investment banking firm that took over Chrysler for a while after Daimler-Benz gave it up did nothing for the good of the car, you know, just trying to cut a fast profit. Sort of like Bain Capital. Oops, did I say something related to Mitt Romney? You know, they were just going in, they're going to skim off the top and then resell it, which is what they did. And shame on them. But, you know, Fiat and their owner, he likes cars, he loves cars, but he wants to make money. And they're making the changes that were overdue. And they're keeping it emotionally based in Detroit. The one thing they don't want is for people in Detroit to think of Chrysler as an Italian car.
Right.
You know, they... You got to avoid that. And, of course, all the Japanese cars and even Kia and Hyundai and that are always promoting, and Honda, all their factories in the U.S. and the U.S. workers that work there. And so they're you know, they got to get people away from we hate foreign cars, we never buy a foreign car. And so the ads have to be inspiring and community-based, like the Chrysler ads were. But this last one, it's a wonderful ad. 2 minutes long, because you can do that in... if you got the money to pay for it during the Super Bowl. And if you want some other gentle satiric criticisms of it, there was three spots on Saturday Night Live last Saturday night. That was the Zooey Deschanel-hosted show. And you can look at them on iTunes or download it from there if you want to. And he did, it's three-quarter time in America. It's fourth quarter in America, and the game is over in America. So they had 3 60-second spots, and it looked the same, you know, and they got the lighting. They had Bill Hader, one of their comedians, dressed up in the what looked like a wig of being
awesome.
An old Clint Eastwood in walking down the alleyway. And they did some silly things. Like, finally they said, and this isn't a Chrysler commercial. It's for Pizza Hut. Pizza, pizza. And, you know, because it doesn't even mention Chrysler significantly. If you were just listening and you weren't watching the screen during halftime, you were munching some snacks, you wouldn't know it was a Chrysler spot.
Couldn't guess.
You know, it would just seem like some PSA that somebody put together.
Right.
I don't know if Al brought that up, but it seems that tit for tat there, I'm just saying some balance, that's what I'm here for, not just criticism, is that he's right about political speech being too restricting at times. And in America, you know, we do allow racist speech and sexist speech. Now, not on WHFR. We have our own personal rules, and I don't think we're being politically correct, but we'll let others do it for you if you've got to hear it that way. We want to stay objective and sane as much as we can and not move into that kind of emotional language. But nonetheless, why would Republicans or Fox News, just because they have something, they have to have something to fill up the time in their 24-hour news channel, why would they go crazy over that Chrysler spot?
I know, but Chrysler has to love it. They have to love the fact
more
that
more publicity.
This,
yeah. You know how many people have watched on YouTube? Over a couple million.
And they got their money's worth.
A couple million.
Yeah,
yeah, sure. And I think they've proven their point there. So thank you, Republicans, for helping Chrysler's business, because
sure.
You mentioned that.
The Italians love you.
Yeah. Okay, moving along, though. I commend the Press and Guide. There are two people, Tim Powers and a woman whose last name I don't have in front of me, and I don't remember clearly. They pull together basically, if you don't know what they are, they're basically press releases from the people already in office. In other words, I get them all the time from John Dingell, because, you know, media, big-time media journalist, and George DeRaney's office, of course, Levin and Stabenow. And anything they do, they have their own press release and put their own positive spin on what they're doing. Now, of course, you're informing the public, and that's good through the media outlets, but it's their own spin on things. But it's good to keep people informed. So what they've done at the Times-Herald is take these and try to treat them as news directly. For example, a number of our state representatives from this area are backing very necessary campaign finance reform in Michigan. And it's a whole group of principals, 10 or 15. George DeRaney is one of the sponsors of the bill, along with Bob Constant. Okay. And that is, you know, what's happening there. And I could go into details. I'm sure it's going to be in the paper in some other way, but it's in the Times-Herald from last Sunday in that section called Around the Capitol. And they mean Lansing.
Right.
They mean Lansing, of course. So the state representatives, and these are just small little tweaking. It's not changing campaign reform radically, but it's eliminating some of the excesses and the lack of transparency. And what are the chances that the campaign finance reform will pass? Not good at all, because the Democrats are proposing it, okay? And they're not in the majority in the House or the Senate, and they don't have the governor in their party either. Although, who knows, maybe Snyder might sign it if it passed. So good for the few Dems. It's all logical stuff. I don't see it as hurting Republicans or anybody. It's all good for democracy, I think. Read it for yourself, page 6A, Around the Capitol, last Sunday's Press and Guide. Dingell, Representative Dingell from pretty much this area. District keeps changing, you know, borders. But he's calling for protecting public from unsafe drugs. Could our pharmaceutical drugs be unsafe? Yes. And we need to do more things to make the drugs that are out there safe. A number of drugs over the last couple of years for diabetes, cholesterol control, have been proven to kill people. I mean, you know, a lot more than they should. There's always some side effects. Yes, we know. We see the small print and hear it on TV. In fact, you know, why anybody would use any of those drugs when you know the side effects? Well, it's only a couple people out of 100 or a couple thousand or 10. Yeah, well, I don't want to be one of those people, okay? There are some things naturopaths, certain kinds of doctors, alternative doctors, holistic doctors, that have no side effects at all and have some advantage. Amoxicillin. Ever heard of that,
sure,
Dennis?
Absolutely.
That's an antibiotic. Public Citizen, which is a watchdog group Ralph Nader started many years ago, is not associated with anymore. They have a big health watch, and they're just publicizing the fact that the latest big study, in fact, even my granddaughter was on amoxicillin for a while for a cold.
My kids, too.
Has no benefit over a placebo.
Oh.
No benefit whatsoever. Now, supposedly fights, it's antibiotic. It fights viruses.
Sure.
No, it fights germs. Nothing can fight a virus.
Right, bacteria.
Yeah, just fights bacteria. But it has no effect in lessening a cold or flu. It should not be prescribed at all. Who's making money on that? Well, who's ever made that drug? But it's not killing anybody, the good news is.
Well, that's good.
Okay.
That was my next question.
But so many of these statin drugs and others, after the fact, after they're out there, have been proven to not have been well-tested. And so Dingell, again, one of the most powerful people in the House of Representatives in Washington, has made some statements and is supporting some committee recommendations. And who knows if that's going to change. Obviously, Republicans in general and even Libertarians say the government regulates too much. Shame on them. Well, who's going to protect us from the unsafe drugs? Or the dirty air, the dirty water, the contamination from nuclear reactors? I mean, who's going to do that?
You're
the
right.
Businesses haven't done that yet. So don't say, oh, the businesses will do it for themselves because it's good for the business to not kill the people in the area or in the country. No, that hasn't been the case. That hasn't worked out that way.
Well, the businesses are sometimes the biggest culprits of making the water bad and making the air bad, you know?
Their bottom line, number one priority is making a profit.
That's right.
And it's making a profit each year.
That's right.
Especially if it's
bigger than last year.
If it's a shareholded company, if it's not a private company, they can look in the long term more.
Right.
But if you sell shares, then your stocks go up or down depending if you're making a profit or not, or how much profit you're making, which is not right. I mean, if a company has a long-term plan that's good for the environment, why should you sell the shares? Because you're not making as much profit, you greedy so-and-sos in the stock market. Shame on you. Well, I'm just trying to make money. Okay. I told Dennis I'd be sounding off here a lot.
I think there's more to come.
Well, we mentioned this before, but still under consideration is, in this Around the Capitol section, is the four-year degree possibilities for community colleges.
Right.
That it's up in the Michigan legislature, but it's only in certain categories.
Always.
In four separate areas, which doesn't make sense to me. Henry Ford Community College, we pretty much have all the classes for three full years. In fact, even remember we had the person in from Cleary University.
Sure.
And even the Frankenstein University. No, it's Franklin University.
Oh, Franklin.
Yeah. They will accept our 3 years.
Sure.
Of our own classes. Count those last classes, which are high level anyway and often don't transfer to a four-year school.
Right.
But they'll take them full-fledged because they are darn good and high quality. And then you just have to take the last year from either Cleary or Franklin to get your BA.
Wonderful.
But we could easily toss in. We have the facilities. We have the instructors with the doctorates and everything. We easily could get that extra year for almost all of our programs, I bet. I mean, the telecom program, we've got the labs. We've got the facilities. We've got the studios. Another year, no big deal, to add it here. But the four-year degree is in at least two areas that we're very good already. One is nursing.
Right.
And the other is, hospitality ed, which is right across the way from WHFR here.
Wonderful, yes.
In the Student Center, one of the best programs in the country, certainly. And Dennis is going to take a phone call in the background here because we don't know what it is. But one that raised questions for me is concrete technology. Concrete technology? A four-year degree in concrete technology? I never heard of such a thing. Is concrete that important for our society? I'm not sure we have a two-year degree in concrete technology.
Okay, but you can tie in a lot of green practices with this, as well as the theme. We have talked on the show about the fact that the way they're making the roads just isn't working.
Well, in Michigan, yeah, we need somebody that knows how to make roads out of concrete and or asphalt.
Sure.
That are going to last a long time. So maybe they have to be trained in school on how to do it better.
I'm wondering.
They can't do it like they did in the past.
Absolutely.
Because we don't have the money to repair the roads every 2 years or every 1 year if we had a bad winter. I'm all in favor of the four-year degrees for community colleges. But why just those four programs? Well, obviously, all the community colleges would be too much competition for the four-year schools because we charge so much less tuition.
And some of the four-year schools can do it better than most of the community colleges.
Somebody'd have to make a decision whether or not, and certain community colleges, not Henry Ford Community College, I would think almost every area we could qualify, show that we have the expertise, we have the facilities.
That's a rare though.
Yeah, but many community colleges in Michigan, in the outlying areas, of course, they just have the basic writing, reading, math, and science classes, and they don't really have many special majors or any classes that might be called junior level, and that's fine. That's fine. But for those programs that are already superior, they should be able to submit their request for four-year credentials, be fairly assessed, not with criticisms from the four-year schools nearby, and let it happen. I mean, the more people that can afford a college degree of quality, the better. I heard some politician, it's such a round number, it's probably wrong, some politician said, there's last night on TV, there's a million jobs in America that no Americans can fill. So we have an extra million job openings. And why can't Americans take these jobs? Because they're not qualified. They don't have enough skills. They don't have enough knowledge. So the jobs are going to go to foreign-born, or they're going to ship them overseas where the foreigners are, who are trained and educated to that extent. And, of course, they also made the comment that a million students are not graduating each year. They're dropping out of high school. Well, yeah, I think Detroit Public Schools are lucky to have 40% left at the graduation time. That's a disaster. And even that person who was making the comment, those people, it was Arne Duncan, our Obama's Secretary of Education, okay, who was on Jon Stewart's show last night. And he should know. And he said, those people are doomed. You know, without at least a high school education, much less a college education, there's no jobs for them.
No.
A life of abject poverty is going to face them. And that's it. That's the fact, Jack. I mean, I can't believe, in 1964, when I graduated from high school, we clearly knew that, even at Little Flat Rock High School down river there. If we didn't finish high school, we would be doomed to work in a gas station or something like that right in Flat Rock for the rest of our lives. Now, that's not so terrible. I mean, there's good ways to run gas stations, good, honest work.
Sure.
A little grease under your nails, but that's okay. You know, you're meeting the people, and it's not a bad job necessarily, but there's not enough of those jobs for people anymore.
True. Okay. And they don't, and whether you like it or not, they don't pay as well as some other jobs that you can get with an education.
Quality of life, if that matters at all to anybody, you got to get that education.
You know what, it's not even a diploma.
Don't let anybody drop out. Please, don't let anybody drop out.
It's not even a diploma, though. I think the associate's degree is the new, associate degree is the new diploma. That's what everybody's talking about. Well, it makes a lot of sense.
When you apply for a job, there's a lot of people applying, perhaps, and the people with the better educational degree are probably going to be preferred. Now, of course, there's job recommendations, personal recommendations, and so on that go along with that, depending on the job. But, yeah, the better the degree, the better the job. In the long term, you're going to make more money. And even criminals don't have an easy, well, I can sell drugs for more money. How long can you do that?
Yeah, and you even need an accounting degree with
that. If you don't have any morality about what you're doing, then I guess that might be a choice, but I hope not. So we should do everything we can to keep the kids in school, make sure the schools are educating appropriately, get everybody educated as far as they can possibly go. Certainly at Henry Ford Community College, we have almost more remedial math and English programs and sections than we do college level. Why? Because we need it. Because people are coming to us not prepared. So we're not saying, talk about being compassionate. We're saying, we know you've got to put in more work here and you're not going to be, very, very happy that you can't start college level degree work for a while, but you got to be able to read and write and know the basics of math, or all these other classes will be a disaster for you too. So,
but fortunately, those things are in place. And again, we've talked about it on the show that our proximity, the area that we're in right now, and the high concentration of people that aren't necessarily born here, we do have to have those classes, those type of classes.
Yeah.
Are we going to a break here?
Jim Hightower has a couple of comments. Again, as you might expect, as a progressive, he's talking about money in politics. And we were just talking about new regulations for campaign financing that a few Democrats are supporting, and we hope Republicans will jump in there in Michigan. Listen to his comments and despair. I think there was a poem about that. But it's the fact, Jack, and we got to change things around. Always something to do. Just like Clint Eastwood said, You know, I might play his spot at the beginning and end of the show from now on, you know, because it doesn't mention Chrysler, right? We just, you know, we all got to work together on this, folks. Democrats, Republicans, everybody. Here we go.
The rich are different from you and me, but the really, really, really rich are also different from the merely rich. For example, the rich can buy caviar and champagne, but the triple R rich can buy entire presidential campaigns. Take Sheldon Adelson, the money bags who's pumped $11 million so far into Newt Gingrich's right-wing run. He has single-handedly kept Gingrich's White House ambitions alive. Without this one guy's money, the Newt would have been long gone. Thanks a lot, Sheldon. But Adelson can easily afford to roll the dice on a far-out candidate. This global casino baron hauled in $3.3 million in pay last year. Not for a year. That's what his hourly take was. In other words, his $11 million bet on Newt, which altered the Republican presidential race, was nothing. Less than 3.5 hours of one of Sheldon's workdays. Even Rick Santorum, who's so far to the right that his left brain has entirely atrophied from lack of use, is actually in the running for the GOP nomination. He insists that people are flocking to him because of the power of his ideas. Sure, Rick. And the power of Foster Freeze's money. This little-known Wall Street multimillionaire has long been a partner in the Koch brothers' plutocratic cabal and a steady funder of right-wing Christian politics. Freeze modestly claims that God is, quote, the chairman of my board. I doubt that, but Freeze definitely is Santorum's guardian angel, having kept his campaign of wackiness afloat with untold infusions of cash. When Freeze was told that Santorum's recent caucus wins would prompt Mitt Romney's Triple R Richies to counterattack, he was thrilled. "I think that is so exciting," he warbled. This is Jim Hightower saying, so there you have it. American politics has developed into a game for the fun and profit of a few super-rich narcissists.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Barack Obama was right on target 2 years ago when he denounced the Supreme Court for allowing unlimited corporate cash to flood into our elections, calling it a, quote, threat to democracy. But now the gushers of that money are pouring into this year's Republican presidential campaigns through super PACs, he has pivoted adroitly from condemning such corrupt funds to creating one of his own. Savvy or cynical? I call it sad. Not because Obama wouldn't stand on principle, but because his switch affirms that special interest money now governs us, too powerful for even the sitting president to resist. These super PACs, all of which are creatures of a handful of rich Americans, were already the biggest power in the Republican presidential contest. Frontrunner Mitt Romney's last name is even an anagram that spells M-O-N-E-Y. And a $30 million super PAC financed chiefly by Wall Streeters has powered him to the front. They want to buy a president who'll undo Obama's financial reform law that restrains some of their greed. That's what our democracy has become. Sad. Rather than taking the high road and rallying a public that's thoroughly disgusted by this, Obama now joins Romney et al. On the money-slick low road. His super PAC, named Priorities USA, is as corrupt as the Republicans. All of them perpetuate the ludicrous legalistic fraud that the secretive funds operate independently of the candidates. Come on, hand puppets act with more independence than super PACs. While Obama piously says that he won't work directly with a PAC, he's directed cabinet officials and White House aides to rustle up big donors to fund it. This is Jim Hightower saying, what we're getting this year is not a presidential election, it's an auction. To help repeal the Supreme Court's money rule, go to unitedforthepeople.org. That's united, the number four, thepeople.org.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
So, does it get your spirit up? Does it make you want to work harder, work together, just like Clint Eastwood recommends? I hope so. This is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to the new WHFR Journal for the next 22 minutes or so. Dennis and Jay with you here. I'm Jay. Looking at the Dearborn Times-Herald from Wednesday the 15th, 2 days ago. Interesting comparing that with the Dearborn Press and Guide from 2 days ago, because both on page 1A, they talk about the Dearborn Public Schools, their administrative building, that is the Tenike building, it needs repairs. And we've said that before, and I said, well, how much? What's wrong? They had a consultant come in for a certain amount of money and said they need to spend $4.9 million to fix the Tenike building.
Wow.
And then the Dearborn Public Schools people had to chime in. Oh, no, 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 no. That's only if you fix everything.
Yeah. Whiston's like, we don't need necessarily all of that.
Well, as we know here at WHFR, there's a lot of things that need fixing, and we're just making do. That's what you have to do today. You know, if it doesn't affect the quality of the signal, then, you know, a broken chair or something that's squeaky, if we can keep it from squeaking on the air. You know, I understand making do, but in another sense, some of those things, you'd like to believe at your school building, everything works and everything is fixed right for the good of the kids. And so it doesn't distract from the learning objective. Okay. Well, within the article from the Times Herald, it does say the school board said, well, about $3 million is at least what we need. And that's primarily because the roof leaks really bad.
Yep.
And it's going to cost $3 million to
replace it. This isn't
Replace it. It's probably not just to, it's a flat roof, so they can't just put asphalt on it. It might be so bad they've got to sort of remove most of the asphalt and then recoat the whole thing all over again. I mean, I know buildings on campus here, it was like that way.
Sure.
Some of our flat roof buildings, it got so bad, so cracked that they had to sort of dig up all that asphalt after years of patching and redo the whole thing. So that looks like part of it. But the Dearborn Press and Guide said, only needs $2.5 million in repairs. Well, 2.5 or about $3 million, there's a difference there. So somehow the Dearborn Public Schools want to downplay the amount of money they need, I think, so that they keep their options open to resist moving in with the city in that alternative building on Michigan Avenue that's been suggested that they had a tour of, the ADP building on Michigan Avenue just west of the Centennial Library. I think that's location.
Yeah, anyway, it is. Yeah.
Okay. Not the one with the wavy
That's right next to it, though.
Lawn, but right next to it. Yeah, that's the next one down, the wavy lawn architectural firm. Okay. But we had a price on that. We still don't know what the city of Dearborn, how much money to replace City Hall. I mean, if they fixed it up to the way that, why do they have to move? Well, as I said, I think the whole fourth floor, one fourth of the building isn't even being used. So that's a problem. I mean, you're heating, sort of heating, and lighting space that doesn't really need it. But what are the other repairs that might be needed? I think, didn't we report last week that the city council has put out another bid to explore a couple, $20,000 or something, $20,000 to explore what the problems would be, what the costs would be there.
That doesn't seem like a decision that is imminent. I mean, there's just too much going on there.
Good to know the Dearborn train station plans are finalized, and they hope to start groundbreaking in West Dearborn. That will replace the current little Amtrak station that's right behind the police station on Michigan Avenue in Dearborn, and they hope to have it done in a year. There you go, in a year. Now, the cost of the city, I thought just worth reporting, is that the city had to put up, I think, about $80,000 to $100,000 on some architectural things, plans, and so on. And then, I didn't know this, but the people that own that land, that is the Lincoln Mercury dealer there.
Right.
Is it Krug?
Krug Lincoln Mercury, yeah.
I think so. That was sort of a storage lot for them. Now, maybe it was Ford land. But anyway, the city had to pay $2 million for it. So there are some costs to the city here, even though we got $28 million from the federal government to help with this, and it's going to be a wonderful thing for the city in terms of increased business and transport, and just it should get West Dearborn moving again, if you will, in terms of economic development. So and I can hardly wait to ride a high speed rail all the way to Kalamazoo.
Wow. Or Chicago.
No, that's the whole joke here, is that Snyder, even in a State of the Union, announced, we're going to have high-speed rail in 2 years to Kalamazoo.
You're right.
The line from Kalamazoo to Chicago is owned by a private company.
That's right. We talked about
this.
And
they won't sell, and they won't upgrade. They won't do nothing. They're not part of Amtrak. And so we're not going to ride high-speed to Chicago ever, because they own the roadway and they own the rail line, and that's just wrong, isn't it, folks? Somehow, but private business, oh, all for the good there. I mean, you know, when they did nationalize a lot of railroads and made Amtrak years ago, and ooh, government socialism. But it just doesn't work if you still got one holdout. You know, how can you improve a rail system if there's one business, private business, yes, that refuses to update, refuses to allow access to anything that's better?
I wonder what their reasoning is. Owning a railroad.
It'll cost them money.
Yeah. But
right now they're making money and they don't need any more. And but if they had extra cost of having to upgrade to high speed, then they would go out of business or something. You know, so it's just money.
Well, the company that's
very narrow, very short-sighted thinking, of course.
Yeah, but I don't know. They could sell the usage of the whatever. There's a lot of ways around.
I can hardly wait to get out to Kalamazoo at 150 miles an hour. I should be at Kalamazoo from Dearborn in about 20 minutes, and then I can go on that Kellogg's tour. Boy, want to find out where the Raisin Bran is made. You know,
that's sarcastic. Have you ever been Kellogg's? Battle Creek?
I've been in Battle Creek.
You've never taken the tour?
No,
it's wonderful. I heard they stopped it for a while. Now they're doing it again, and they give you a little thing of different kinds of cereals as a gift when you leave.
Yeah, once there's high-speed rail, everybody's going to go there for the cereal.
Why not?
The freebies.
All right. Well, you know, we're dealing very close to tax season, and coming up, this is Friday, March 2nd at 10 a.m. at the Henry Ford Centennial Library Auditorium on Michigan Avenue. They're having a town hall on the recent tax changes. Lawmakers urge community members to get answers on state tax structure changes. This will include Representatives George Duraney from Dearborn, Robert Constant of Dearborn Heights, and also the special guest is Wayne County Commission Chairman Gary Warnchek. So this is March 2nd, Friday, 10 a.m. in the Henry Ford Centennial Library, and they're going to be there to answer questions on the recent changes to the tax structure. That's really it. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more complicated than we can go into here, but that's why they're having that, so they can ask.
Well, I'm sure the Republicans want to note that this is Democrats only there. Gary Warnchek turned from Republican to Democrat to run for the Wayne County Commission. But, you know, a lot of people are concerned, and in fact it was an editorial in the Times Herald this last Wednesday from the Traverse City Record Eagle, but it's still they printed it as their editorial endorsement too. Pension tax rollout of blunder for seniors. Okay, that's 4.35% additional tax on your pension, okay? And that's not Social Security, but that's on your pension from, like, as a teacher. I have a pension from the state of Michigan, thank God, because I couldn't live on Social Security alone, that's for sure, even after 40 years of working hard full-time. Anyway, they didn't adequately tell people that they were going to start taking out withholding for that money.
But it gets worse, though, doesn't it?
Well, there's the category of people born before 1946 that won't have to pay this tax, and now they're going to have to ask for withholding back at the end. But they forgot to tell people that if you're in one of those categories, either no exemption or a partial exemption, and you don't want us to take out all the money up front for you, you got to let us know and file a new W-4 form, a deduction form, saying don't take it out, because I don't want to wait to have to get it back later. Now these people will be able to file next year, and then they'll get a full rebate if they're exempt or partially exempt for whatever but they didn't tell anybody. So all of a sudden, a couple hundred bucks less in January, a couple hundred bucks less in February, and a lot of people are really mad about that. I have to say that there are over a dozen states that do not tax pensions at all. Period. As you know, I've been heavily researching them the last couple of years. I am retired. I could relocate. I love WHFR. I love Henry Ford Community College, but it would save me a couple of $1,000s a year.
He's not going anywhere.
Don't tempt me. There is a state that has no income tax.
Connecticut.
No sales tax.
No, wait.
And no pension tax.
Vermont or?
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire, sorry. I lived in Connecticut and there was no sales tax.
At one website that I got to through the ARP, the old people's site, but one objective site said the two worst states out of the whole 50 for seniors to live in, and this is all the taxes all together, all the cost of living. Okay, number one worst is Maine.
Okay.
Number two, Michigan.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. And especially now, I mean, taking into account this new pension tax, we're maybe, in fact, I'm not sure they did, because this was back last November, so the pension tax wasn't officially in place.
Right.
And maybe the study, if they added that in, maybe we'd beat Maine as the worst state for retirees financially to be in.
Take that, Maine. They're jealous.
Yeah, Michigan, number one, yeah, again.
Well, hey, you know what's coming up? Every year, the Dearborn Heights League of Women Voters produces a who's who of elected officials, and this year is no different. The 2012 edition has just been completed, and copies will be available next Friday, Friday the 24th, at both city clerk's offices, both Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, and at the libraries in both Dearborn and Dearborn Heights. An expanded version is available at the league website, www.lwvddh.org. That's the who's who of elected officials. That's cool.
Right. You can get that in city clerk's office.
Yeah.
Well, we have to conclude the show in 10 minutes now. Of course, Highway 61, the best in blues, will be starting at 2 o'clock or thereabouts. There was an error, and I think it was just a downright, it wasn't an error. It was a passed along bit of misinformation from the Republican Party, but I can't prove it, of course, in the Press and Guide this last Wednesday. It was on page 9A, and it clearly said that it wanted to let you know that there's a primary to vote in Michigan on February 28th. That's a week from Tuesday, folks, okay? It is a presidential primary. First error, they said it was a Republican primary. Wrong. You could vote in the Democratic side. Okay? Yes. No, the Democratic Party issued a statement a few weeks ago saying, don't vote. You know, we're officially saying, don't vote. But you still can. If you want to vote for Obama or someone else, you could do a write-in. You go in there and you can choose either to vote in the Democratic presidential primary or Republican one. Now, the Dems have already said, though, if you're in the party, if you're a card-carrying Democrat and you're going to intend to vote later in the precinct meetings that'll actually decide who the nominee is going to be, of course, we assume it's going to be Obama, a sitting president. His approval ratings are now up to 50%. Not bad. Half the people hate you, half the people love you. Anyway, so they're going to try to stick with them, and the party will do everything they can to make sure there's no disturbance or distortion or any other name that gets submitted there. But nonetheless, it's your Democratic right. So this is Michigan's presidential primary, and you could go in as a Democrat, or you could vote on either the Democratic side or the Republican side. Error number two, clearly said, both in the article and the subtitle, that it is a closed primary. Only registered Republicans can vote on February 28th. Let me state that. A closed primary and the registration, pre-registration of voters for one party or the other has never been the case in Michigan. That has never been the case and is not now. I even checked with the Dearborn City Clerk yesterday just to make sure there wasn't a law that snuck in there. Okay, we do not have closed primaries. We never have, which means, and this isn't good, neither Dems or Republicans like it, but anyone can go in and ask for either the Democratic or Republican ballot and then vote. And so that means, first of all, there can be those evil people. The Democrats can go in, vote in the Republican primary, and vote for the worst Republican. In other words, the one they think Obama could most easily beat. But the Republicans could sneak into the Dems, even this on the 28th, and vote for somebody other than Obama, if they wanted to be that nasty and ugly. I never think it's worthwhile to do that. I think you should vote for the best candidate. Okay? I'm an independent. Okay? And most people, if asked, if you had to register, would you register Democrat, Republican, or independent? There's only three choices. I'm sorry, because the Dems and Republicans control how these things happen.
Sure.
So, majority of people would say, I'm going to register as an independent, which means what? Well, in a primary, they could vote in either one anyway. Okay,
right.
So even if it was closed, an independent could still come in, even in the states where it's closed in this kind of thing. Anyway, Michigan does not have a closed, and it's not just registered Republicans, whatever the heck that is, because we don't have that in Michigan, that can vote on Tuesday, February the 28th. Why would this happen? It's obvious that the reporter got a press release or was tied in very closely to a Republican, mainline, mainstream Republican Party person who wanted to pass out that information to try to scare away either those evil Democrats that would come over and vote for the worst Republican, or independents, which is the largest group of people in Michigan, the unidentified independents, to come in and vote for the best Republican. Because right now, a lot of independents, I think, are going to be voting for Ron Paul or whoever else. But if you really want to help the Republicans, who apparently have some trouble making a decision who their best candidate is, and you're just an open-minded person, and you say, I think the best Republican would be, and I'm going to say Santorum here, and start coughing and gulping. But if that's your belief and you're an independent, then by all means go in there. You do not have to be a registered Republican. You got me? There is no such thing as pre-registered voting to one party or the other in Michigan. And so that story, if read the way it was written, will discourage independents and Democrats from voting. And that's never good in a democracy. You don't want to scare anybody away who legally has the right to vote in an election. It's bad enough that we don't have a good turnout, but to scare people away by that misinformation is wrong. So the city clerk's office was also responding to the press and guide. I'm sure other people have too. I left a call in with the editor, and I'm sure that'll be straightened out. They have to, because it is totally factually wrong to say that it's a Republican primary only, and number two, that you have to be a registered Republican in order to vote. And they use those terms, closed primary. We have no such thing in Michigan. It is not that in Michigan. So we encourage you to consider voting, whether you're independent, Republican, or Democrat. Just know the Democratic Party will try to disenfranchise you if you vote for anybody in the primary, which I think is crazy. But, you know, it only matters if you're a registered member of the Democratic Party, how you've it only matters for you to vote in the precinct meetings, which will be held later, not on February 28th. So how do you feel about that, Dennis?
I think you handled that far more calmly than I expected. No, I mean, you're right.
There's I'm not putting down the press and guide. These things happen. They write up press releases. I told you that around the Capitol is just slightly massaged press releases from the politicians about what they're doing, but that's okay. In this case, it gives the totally wrong view to the voters about who can vote or not, and I don't want anybody to be scared away with factual misinformation.
Right. That really is the bottom line, that people would be scared away. I don't know. I really don't know how to take this.
Want to go back to Goodwill, or do you want to say something else?
I want to say something about just really 2 seconds on the political thing. Is that I want to know what you feel about the Green Party's candidate, Roseanne Barr. Very interesting, because she wants to be taken seriously.
I get emails from, as you know, all political parties, part of the media thing, you know, and I saw that they had several candidates nationally in different states that are trying to get attention of their own precincts and their own memberships to find a candidate for their convention that will be in Baltimore in July, the Green Party of America, of the United States. That's what they're called.
Right.
And of the top four candidates, I know one that has the most support is a woman named Jill Stein, S-T-E-I-N. And although I think he hasn't got a lot of national support, but Harvey Mickelson, that we interviewed on this show, candidate, Green Party candidate for governor in the last election.
That's right.
I liked him, a former teacher, or his wife was a former teacher, but very intelligent, very knowledgeable. I was very impressed with him. Well, he put his hat in the ring, if you will, to be the national candidate from the Green Party of the U.S. for president. But the other candidate, I kept reading the name Roseanne Barr several times. No, it couldn't be the comedian talk show host Roseanne Barr. Couldn't be. It is.
It is. And again, she wants to be taken seriously. I can't read this quote from her because she says some things that we don't say on the air. But
well, on her talk shows and sometimes on, wasn't she on the that all-woman talk show? What is that called? The Talk?
I have no idea.
Well, it's a daytime woman show, and Barbara Walters is on it. And they have,
The View?
The View, yeah.
Yeah.
But she was on it briefly and then had so much controversy because she was a very liberal person, let's say, but also a little exaggerated in some of her expressions.
Sure.
I mean, liberals don't have to be that way. But
no.
She sort of gave a bad impression on liberals, I think, and Fox News harshly criticized. But she is, she's got 9% according to the straw poll among the people. 9%.
19.
19?
Of the youth vote.
Of the youth vote.
This is between 18 and 29, and that's
but
not...
But it's not across the U.S., though.
No.
That's just within the Green Party membership or something.
Yes, you're right.
Always be suspicious of these kinds of polls and numbers, folks, because there's so many variables.
But. No, it said in a three-way contest between Barr, Democratic incumbent Barack Obama, and Republican hopeful Mitt Romney, Barr pulls in 90% of voters between the ages of 18 to 29, narrowly trailing Republican hopeful Mitt Romney by 5 points.
And who did that study? I bet Roseanne Barr put the money on
Public Policy Polling.
Right, yeah, but who paid for it? So
You know what, and you're right. This is a Green Party news release, so they're not going to tell
us. Yes, right.
At the same time, she's got her name recognition.
Yeah, and that's so important. The Libertarian Party is looking for a presidential candidate, and former Republican governor of New Mexico, Gary Johnson. Switch parties? He said he's always been really a Libertarian, and the Republican Party wouldn't let him be part of any of these debates this year.
Right.
He wanted to run as Republican candidate. They wouldn't let him in. So, well, not enough people know you. What? Okay. So a lot of people know of him in the Libertarian Party, and he's been winning straw polls, and he's been visiting every state across the U.S. He has a lot of momentum, and their national convention comes up in Las Vegas. It comes up soon in Las Vegas. I think it's May 2nd through 6th, the Libertarian Party. And what it means is he has already been elected. He's a proven politician. He knows how to campaign. He's elected twice in New Mexico, and he doesn't have any skeletons in his closet, I don't think.
Right.
Always remains to be seen. It means the just like Roseanne Barr for the Green Party, if you have somebody with that kind of name, whenever you do a poll, all of a sudden you do pretty well because people know the name.
Sure.
And that might get you into, amazingly, the presidential debates. Finally, because they always say, well, if you don't have 15% of the poll group, whatever we're looking at here, that know you and like you, you can't be part of the big time presidential debates
right.
later in the year before the election. And so if a third party can get enough recognition one way or the other, and of course, the Libertarian Party is the third largest in membership in the U.S. With Gary Johnson and getting his name out there, and then Roseanne Barr automatically just like. But, you know, Ralph Nader, he was well-known, and he became the Green Party candidate in 2000. Did that get him in the debates? No, it didn't. So who knows? But it's worth a try. I think that these so-called third parties are the smaller parties in America who have different agendas and consistent platforms and honest people, a lot of good people in these other parties. And there's more than just two other parties. Besides Dems and Republicans, in fact, they just don't get the attention they need from the media. So to help that out, next Friday, we're going to have a representative from the Libertarian Party of Michigan here.
Sure.
And because they don't get enough attention from the Republicans or the media, and we're going to talk about that
now. And if listeners are wondering.